Oh, hello, and welcome to this edition, this week's Live Stream Live. I am your host, Joshua Schubart, and here's a word from our sponsor. We don't have a sponsor yet, but hopefully soon we will have one. Today's show mug is The Nightmare Before Christmas, because while spooky season may have come to an end, Christmas season is upon us for those who celebrate. I know Thanksgiving is first, but I just you will always carry spookiness in your heart. You're around. The Nightmare Before Christmas is certainly a toozy. As always, we are going live on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. So if you are in any of those places, say hello, ask a question, leave a comment. I will do my best to answer them as quickly and as magically as I possibly can. So I have a really cool person to speak to this evening. Her name is Nancy Cantine. She is an actor, model, stunt person. She lights people on fire, lights herself on fire, is just an all-around badass woman. Oh, cool. So you already put up your black Christmas tree. I know, that's pretty cool. That's pretty goth. I do like a goth thing. I do like The Night Before Christmas. I'm very, very much like that. Anywho, so let's jump right into what's going on with me. I know it hasn't been a long time. It's been a short time. It's been a short weekend. What did I do? I had an audition for a commercial over the weekend, which was a lot of improv-y fun. From Brazil, hello from Brazil. Hello, all of my Spanish-speaking friends that are here. Greetings, maybe you don't like it. Oh, okay, thanks, brother. It was a fun audition for a national brand. We'll see what happens. I am wearing my Normalized Normal Body shirt. This is a shirt that my wife actually turned me on to. It's an influencer who used to have a massive eating disorder and has come to terms with her mental health and herself, and is really trying to pump out the message that we just gotta be okay with ourselves. And I agree with that. You gotta be okay with yourself, or nothing will be okay. What's this tree called? It's called a Black Colorado. Imagine Charles Dickens. Hope you're doing well. I will imagine Charles Dickens, and I am doing very well. Thank you. Let's see. What did I watch? What did I watch? Over the weekend, I watched a film called Civil War. It's the A24 film with Kirsten Dunst, about literally America going into a civil war. And I don't know why me and my wife and a couple of my friends watched this film, but it was not only very good, but also extremely scary and kind of traumatizing. But altogether, it was really well done. Has anyone else seen this film? I think it came out at, like, end of last year or the beginning of this year. It's about a president who takes a third term and does all these atrocities, like, drone strike his own people, and there's like water shortages, and I found it pretty interesting who the writers felt would be part of the secessionist states. It was like Florida and Texas and California were actually in and actually allied. So I actually found that pretty interesting, and I could actually see it happen. Just because if you would hope that even though California and Texas are potentially politically diametrically opposed, that if there was a like great horrible political atrocities happening in our own country, that they would band together as one and try and help out. You would hope that would be the case with everyone, but It did a really good job of painting the picture of a country whose people are either trying to keep to themselves, or they're afraid, or any of that type of stuff. That is what I watched. I have not watched the season finale of Penguin yet. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm not all caught up, but I will be soon. So please don't spoil it for me, but I watched the second to last episode, and that was a very good. I watched it the other day. There are so many people here from all over the world, and it's pretty insane. I'm so appreciative of everyone tuning in from Brazil and Uruguay, and I know that there's people from the Netherlands and France and England and Scotland and literally all over the place in this magical world that for some reason have found me and have really taken a liking to me, and I really appreciate that a lot. I showed this the last time, but it will be going on some merch soon, so I just wanted to show it to you again. A really amazing artist by the name of Isaiah Ferguson made this magical piece of artwork for me. It is my character Frank from The Tick, from a really cool moment in episode two where I'm talking to my boss, Miss Lint, and it has the line that I say, yes, hard feelings, and also the image is a reference to what I say afterwards, which was, you zapped Albert so hard that he lost Tuesday. And it's an ohm and it's an homage to old comic book corners, and it's the exact date and episode number where my character first comes onto the show. So it's really special and really cool, and I'm so happy with it. And it's gonna go on shirts and stickers and crap soon, so you'll be able to share my happiness. What's that question? How do you stay so up and positive? Does it come naturally? No. I will say it's a thing that I have to work at. I am positive by nature now. It took lots of therapy, lots of years of changing the way that I operate in my mind. At my lowest point in my life, I was homeless and eating out of a garbage can. So I always say all the time that as long as I'm not eating out of a garbage can, everything is perfectly fine. And I can handle anything if I could handle that. So as long as I'm not down in that place, everything is really, really awesome all the time. Life is not easy, but it's also not terrible. So if you can look at it in a more positive way, it really helps you move forward with whatever you need to move forward with. That's a long answer for that short question, but here we go. So that's me. That's what I've watched, what I'm thinking about, and I answered that really awesome question. Thank you so much for that. I will be looking around. I'm not going crazy. I am looking at comments and questions from YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. So I might be like, but it's just me trying to make sure that you are heard, and I can answer anything that you want to be answered. So I'm about to bring up Nancy. Nancy is, I've known her for a number of years. She is not only one of the most badass women I have ever known, but she is also just so talented, so kind and generous with her advice and with her ear and with her shoulder when you need it. She's a great friend and just an even better person. And we're gonna watch her reel first. She lights herself and people on fire. It's wild. And here we go.
Where are you?
So, hi everyone, welcome Nancy. That was fucking awesome. You can use profanity on my show. I don't give a shit. So if you want to
That's
curse,
really fucking good
yeah,
because I
you go
have
right
a
fuck ahead. I don't give a
hard
shit.
time turning it off.
So hi. How's it going? Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. I mean, you've built quite a little magical career for for yourself over the past, what is it, like 10, 12 years or so?
Yeah, I started out classical ballet, started doing some commercial dance stuff, music videos, cruise ships. Of course, the music videos, I was like, oh, I absolutely prefer film as a medium, and was like, okay, actors make movies. So I did a bunch of acting training and started trying to do that. And then I realized the movies I really like are action comedies. And I thought, okay, well, who makes, because the big thing for me throughout my whole career has been I've just looked to other people who are kind of doing what I want to do and then tried to reverse engineer what they have. I think a lot of people try to make something for themselves, and that's beautiful, but other people have already like made a map for you if you want to use it.
No, that is very true. Can we talk a little bit about like getting into classical dance first?
Totally.
So that was kind of where you got your start trying to like you got the I guess
I
the
was 3 years
performing itch.
old and I decided I wanted to be a ballerina.
Awesome.
And that was like all the critical thought that went into that choice until I was about like 23 and very broken.
Yeah, well that well it happens fast, right? Like
Yeah. It
you're behind
happens
this stuff.
fast, and in retrospect, like stunts has been such a gift for me because it is so safety first. There is a culture of taking care of yourself. There are much healthier kind of boundaries. But I think in the specifically the ballet culture, it is some of the abuse is so baked into the training that not something. It's not a industry I miss, but I am so grateful to it for making me strong and flexible and adaptable and able to take a note the first time and
Sure.
understand what it takes to put on a live show. But yeah, people are like, oh, how'd you get into that? I was three and I wanted a tutu, and God damn it, I did it.
So has that particular industry changed at all since you were in it? Like you were talking about how it was pretty abusive and like this has got to be like this, or you can't do it, or you have to be a certain weight, or you have to have a certain look, or be a certain height. Has that changed at all from your understanding?
I'm no longer immersed in that world. So I don't want to overstep what somebody else's lived experiences.
Sure.
Yellow face is something that the ballet world is like slowly working on taking out. I mean, I remember being a kid and you literally have people running around on stage in the Nutcracker in yellow face, going like full on caricature. And it's only been within the past 10 years that there's really been a like national level dialogue of like, it's not good, you guys. Like, not a good,
Yeah,
not a good
no,
look
it's not good. You can't do that.
for
Yeah, it's
you
not nice.
guys. And I think some of that, like the fact that that's so recent, does point to the power dynamics between a choreographer and an artistic director and a not-for-profit company with, a bunch of 20, 30-year-olds who are told that they're lucky to be there and on poverty wages. And, it's like another, good boundary that broke down maybe is Rockettes removed their height requirement. So
Okay.
now they have a, smaller and taller ladies in their kick line. And, you know, one of the girls I went to high school with, Shelby Finney, is now a Rockette and living that dream and loving that life. And there's a part of me that's like so happy to see her there. And there's a part of me that's like, they run you guys like racehorses.
Yeah, they do so much. They do so many shows and they rehearse so much. One of my friends is also in the Rockette company. And I mean, she got hurt and they were very, very accommodating, which is great. And she still has her job and she has her health insurance and all that stuff. And I don't know if that would have been a thing 5-10 years ago. So maybe that has changed. Maybe that has changed.
I think they've been AGMA for a long time.
Yes.
I think that house has been AGMA for a long time. So yeah, definitely like a more corporate job, but corporate comes with things like healthcare and stuff like that. So
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
When's so the last live show you did?
The last live show I did was actually on Friday. I did Rigoletto at the Metropolitan Opera, where I did like a fight there. I did like a hand-to-hand fight and like a, and then I like picked a guy up and then that was my whole thing.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was my last live show. I work at the Opera House pretty frequently doing their stage combat stuff. So
awesome.
It's fun. Yeah, I mean, you know, I never got into stunts. I can do all the stunts that I'm allowed to do as an actor. And I usually try to push it harder than I'm supposed to. But yeah, like you do all the things that fucking scare the shit out of me, Nancy. Like, like that part in your reel where you get like shot in the face with like a fire cannon, that is wild.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one clip that has gotten me a lot of street credit, even with stunt people. mean, that is so, pretty extreme.
So with fire, so it's got to be incredibly difficult just to do it, like just because of the heat. Like, can you walk us through like how you stay protected and how you don't have, like, you look very not burned. So how do you
keep yourself cute. Not burned?
Yeah, you still got all your skin and hair and you look all right. So
yeah, I would say, and like the fear is always having information taken out of context and then somebody going and hurting themselves. So to kind of like take 10 steps back and start, you know, okay, a safe legal burn.
Okay.
The production is going to file permits with the city or state and get approval from a fire marshal. Fire marshal might say, no, you can't do it. Fire marshal might say, okay, you can do it as long as winds are below 25 miles an hour. Fire marshal might say, you can do it, but you need to have 2 water trucks on standby. Fire marshal might say, you can do it, but you need to have 2 water trucks and an ambulance on standby. And every city, county permitting is going to be different. So that's all before it's even touched kind of the stunt department. A stunt coordinator is either going to act as a burn rigger or they're going to hire out another burn rigger. There's going to be 2 to 3 safeties, and then the person or people on fire, you're What's either there rigger? Is like bad guy number 4, or you're doubling someone. A bunch of the big burns and bigger stunts I've gotten, it's been because I'm doubling an actor.
What's a burn rigger?
The term rigger.
Yeah, what is a burn rigger?
So that's the person who's bringing in their kit, bringing in their materials, overseeing, putting the fuel on the performer. They're kind of taking like creative credit and responsibility for that stunt performer being on fire. So it's okay. A off-camera position within the stunt department, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah. Okay. So they're like the coordinator of this specific
Of that niche
thing.
thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And some like coordinators are fire people and will do it. Some people will bring in a whole separate specialist to run that little niche thing. Or even if it's just a big show and they have four big things going on that day, there might be a cars coordinator and a burns coordinator and someone who's like solely just running the wires for the day.
Okay, so can you walk through like, so I've heard, and I don't know if this is real or not, but like you can't like breathe while you're doing this, right? Like if you inhale the fire, you'll like burn all your lungs out.
So, and that's some of where we've got like old school thought and new school thought coming in. And some of that's the technology has changed. They used to use like really toxic diesel fuels that burn black and are gross and you don't want in your lungs. used to be a lot more layers. Now we have better technology. It's something a little more streamlined. I try to use fuels that are less toxic. None of stunts is like good for your health, you know? Like the bar is like pretty low, but you want to be, you know, making creative art that's not destroying your performers. So stuff with low fumes, burns at low temperatures. No, you should not inhale fire. I can tell you from experience it tastes bad. And it tastes like burnt soup for, you know, a week or two. But if you're inside the fire, no, that's not a good time to breathe. If you're moving so fast that the fire is behind you and you have a window of oxygen, I'm of the train of thought I would rather take a calculated breath there as opposed to, you know, feel like I'm doing a free diving breath hold for the next 10 seconds of my burn.
So if you're like running or like walking quickly, then you could catch a breath in there, maybe.
Yeah, because when you think about like the shape of fire and the dance of fire, it like an ignition will happen really fast, but when you are on fire, and being able to move is part of what lets you disperse that heat and keep it off you to make you be able to safely perform the burn longer. Whereas if it's the story says it's a stationary burn. Okay, we know it's going to be a shorter burn. That performer is going to cook a little faster. We're going to call in safety sooner.
Yeah, so I've never ever thought about like the shape of fire or any of the stuff that you just said. It is really interesting, but it makes a lot of sense, right? Like you have to think about those things in order to both perform it effectively and to execute it as the rigor, right? Like it's part of the whole thing, which makes sense because I would just scream and die if I was on fire. I would. Like, I mean, maybe if I had the training the way that you do, but I've got like a pretty pronounced anxiety disorder. And two of the things that I knew that I couldn't do when I was learning how to do like combat stuff is that I couldn't do the fire and I couldn't do high falls. Do you do high falls also?
So honestly, it's not something that I've ever super specialized in. I've done like 20-foot falls for movies. I don't think I've ever even practiced above 30 feet. It's kind of one of those stunts that got a lot of action in the 80s, and then you see it on some like indie productions nowadays, or like, I mean, even Marvel had a high fall, end up with a fatality a couple years ago. So the huge network shows have pulled back. But high fall specifically fall in a funny thing in stunts because a lot of times you're getting hired for something an actor cannot do, an actor will not do, or an actor cannot be insured to do. So like high falls are falls from height. Specifically, if you're getting into like the nerddom of stunts, over 30 to 35 feet is when it's no longer a low fall and now it's a high fall.
I mean, 30 feet is pretty
20
high.
feet is a big fall.
Yeah, that's a big fall. Like, you could really hurt yourself. Isn't that like the roof of a house or something? Isn't that like 30 feet? Yeah. People have, I've watched people at parties in high school, jump off of houses, and break their legs when they miss the pool. So,
Correct.
yeah.
Yes. And the 30 feet is kind of where you stop going into boxes, and it starts being more like, okay, you're going to be hitting an airbag. But that 30 feet mark is what it is for OSHA of if you're over 30 feet, you're supposed to be restrained. So now any of the big falls that are supposed to be over 30 feet, people are actually doing on wires now, and the wires are getting edited out.
Oh, so it's a lot, it's much safer, like super
If the
safe.
wires work,
Right, if the wires don't break or something.
you know, like we're always in this dance of like the technology gets better, so we push the technology further until it fails. So the technology gets better, so we push the technology further until it fails. Like all the wire stunts used to be on piano wire, which is why they're like pretty simplistic. Okay, now the VFX technology gets better, so now we can paint out bigger wires. So now we're using steel cable wires instead of the skinny little piano threads. Now people are doing way more complex stuff on wires and pushing their systems to a way crazier point, not with a static load, with a dynamic load, because now you have guys backflipping or bashing into each other, you know, doing whatever you're asking them for the action, and now you're creating new weak spots in your system that you just haven't foreseen yet. So, as an industry, there's always kind of like it's safer until someone gets a really fucking good idea that goes wrong or equipment gets used until failure. But whenever someone's like, oh, so it's safer, that's a red flag to me because safety is a feeling, not a mathematical reality,
Oh, okay.
which you start. I think like I'm hyper
Really? So
aware of
there's
it because
no.
I'm a stunt performer and it's gonna be, you know, my body on the line.
Yeah.
But you know, people will say totally harebrained things because they think it's gonna be safer. They think they're helping, and they're maybe complicating a process or like, I
Can
remember
you
I was stunt
explain?
coordinating a shot where a guy had to jump out of the back of a truck. And the medic comes up to me and she's like, well, can you put a mattress down? And it's like, one, no, it's in the shot. Two, respectfully, she's trying to get ahead of her job. She's the medic. She's there if something goes wrong.
Right.
She's not necessarily supposed to be intervening on the, you know, creative side. It's a sweet thought, but if you're jumping out of a truck, you actually want the feedback from the ground. It's actually more, you know, rough on your ankles if you're hitting a squishy mat. You know, for the specific action that this guy was doing.
Yeah, I
So
guess I wouldn't think about that. Yeah.
yeah, so sometimes like I think stunt people or stunt coordinators get this reputation of like being kind of gruff on set. And I think it just comes from a lot of the time like we are hyper focused on something that is like legitimately high risk and needs to be executed and is incredibly time sensitive. And it's like anything that's going to take us away from that focus of keeping that team member safe and performing at their highest level through that stunt and through that moment, it's like not the time. Like
Well,
if you
so
want.
can you explain what you just said? So, safety is not a mathematical thing. It's a feeling. So like
Sure. So when the average civilian is thinking about their relationship with safety. They're thinking about an emotional reality. They're not thinking about the chemistry or the physics of the system that they're getting onto. And they're playing this terror and they're playing this adrenaline, whereas the person is safe.
Okay.
The reality of the situation should be the person is safe. Now let's say, okay, so for the sake of, you know, the safety conversation, We need to have a guy suspended on a wire. System is fine. It's rated for the weight. It's rated, 10 times what it's supposed to be doing. We take the guy up, we have him suspended. He starts to panic. Is he now more or less safe?
Less, I guess less, yeah.
He's now less safe because of his actual emotional reaction as opposed to the system he's living in.
Sure.
So, and there's like, okay, so what if he is so stressed he has a heart attack? Do we have a system in place to rescue this person, this concussed person, or this non-responsive person? And I like one of the darker conversations to have is like performer execution can is an aspect. Sometimes
Okay.
it's the rig, sometimes it's the weather, sometimes it's the day. Sometimes a performer over executes or under executes, and there are consequences for that. But like sometimes when I'm in like the pre-production conversations and people were like, oh, well, won't it be more safe? If it's a stunt day, it's not safe. We're taking calculated risks, but we're going to be making our decisions from hiring the best people, the most capable people, the real world limitations of what the day and the weather and the time and the light is. But you don't go to watch Mission Impossible to say, oh, that was such a safe action scene.
No, it's, yeah, I guess that's true.
Oh, Tom Cruise like really rode that bike in a responsible manner.
I totally get that. I totally get that. It's just this is stuff that people don't ever think about, right? Like you hear about people getting hurt or like even getting killed, and you're like, how'd that happen? Isn't this supposed to be safe? Like I thought these people were trained, and I thought they had these protections in place and all that stuff, but that makes a lot of sense, like way more sense than whatever I had in my brain. And I've worked with members of the stunt community a lot, and I've watched them execute some wild stuff. Like when I was on the tick, there were guys that were standing right next to an exploding car. Like it blew up and they were 2 inches from it. And they threw themselves away. And I'm sure the explosion helped also push them away. And I was there too, but I was at the other end of this like line of SUVs. And it felt like I was going to fucking die because of the heat wave that came off of the explosion. I didn't have to do any acting, and I was so far away from any danger. And these two incredible dudes literally got blown up, and they were fine. It's crazy to me. It's fucking crazy, Nancy, what you all do. It is fucking mind-blowing. It really
Yeah,
is.
I would say something I think you would relate to a lot because you do the fighting at the opera
Yeah.
is like I don't know if you ever get like a greener guy in there and he starts like he's doing the choreography of the fight. And he's done it in a safe manner before, but now his actor emotions or his adrenaline is firing and he's coming in like way too hard with hits or like amping up tempo. And it's not that the fight choreography was ever unsafe, it's that the performer in it is kind of like the racehorse that doesn't quite know that he's like bucking.
That happens all the time, but it actually happens with the opera singers because the opera singers don't usually fight, right? And then when they do, they're fighting us. So we're around them to make sure that they don't go off the rails or like something bad happens, right? But it's usually in a sword fight, and the first couple of times, or if it's being broadcast in HD, they can go blit like crazy, like fucking fast and crazy, like exactly like you're talking about. And it can get kind of hairy and it can get kind of scary. And there are specifically men that I work with that are opera singers that if we have a like altercation where we have to like manhandle each other or like bump into each other or I have to like hold a person back, they think it's fun because of how big and muscular I am to like actually do it. They like actually want to fight me because they're like, you can do it, you can handle it. You can do it. You're big and strong. And I'm like, yes, it's true, I can. But when we do this over and over again, you're gonna like break my knee. Like, and that's just not gonna be a thing that's gonna be great for me. So I totally understand.
How is that for you in the power dynamics of opera? Because I imagine it's like the diva, and the diva's like, here's how today's gonna go, and you're like, my name's not on the awning.
Yeah, I mean, we do a pretty good job of like being like, especially when it's a fight or it's a bit of violence or they're being picked up or something, we all do a really good job of like, we're all the same in this moment. We're all trying to be safe. We're supporting you so that you can get the correct amount of air into all of your chambers so that you can sing. And you are going to support us by not hurting us. And like that's, and most of the time it works. It's never a diva. It's always like a, it's like always like a baritone or a tenor that's like really feeling themselves and really wants to kind of go hard, which is fine most of
That actually
the time.
like warms my heart so much to hear that it's like not as like I just, there's power dynamics to every workplace, there's power dynamics to every industry, but the horror stories of like what come out of TV and film and entertainment when those power dynamics are abused are just so freaking gnarly. It actually like totally warms my heart to know that all is well at the Metropolitan Opera.
I mean, all is wellish now. It wasn't always, right? Like they've had their fair share of scandal and power dynamic issues, but it certainly is never. I've never seen it more pronounced than in TV and film, and even like the power dynamics that I have when I'm on the call sheet as a performer. Where I hate them, but like for example, like PAs holding umbrellas over my head when we're walking around outside because I can't get tan or I can't get burnt or whatever. Like I can hold my own umbrella and I want to, but if I don't let them do it, they'll lose their job, right? And that's like a, and that's a power dynamic that I hate because I don't want some fucking human to hold my umbrella. I can hold my own umbrella.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think of that because I feel like, and I noticed such a difference when I'm like in a stunt actor job to when I'm like, I'd say 80, 90% of my work is just fully stunts.
Yeah.
But the actor treatment is like kind of overwhelming a little bit sometimes. Like in stunts, you're just kind of hanging with your team and, PAs will shuffle you around a little bit. But as an actor, they are taking you door to door throughout the morning sometimes. And it's like, whoo, I'm
Well, there's
being
this
wrangled.
belief that actors, they have to be like super coddled or they're not going to be able to perform or they're going to get like grouchy or shitty and then it's going to ruin the whole day and you're going to go over budget, and it's going to be fucked. And you know what? Sometimes that's true. There are folks that suck. They suck so bad and they treat people like a bag of dicks and they get whatever they want and it's really hard to watch and it's really hard to work with. It's why when I'm on set, I try as really hard to be just like me and just be like nice and kind and talk to people and handle my shit the best that I can. Like I go get my own breakfast, I like do all that stuff. Like unless I absolutely can't, but it's set up on sets that this is the power dynamic, right? Like it's like the actor or the performance talent is treated this way no matter how they ask for it, right? Like if they don't want it, that's too bad, you're gonna get it, right? So it's really weird, but I noticed it too because the stunt team, one day we got to location and there were no trailers for the stunt folks. And I've got like a triple wide one, and I was headed to set and I was like, and I went to the first AD and I was like, you can put all those guys in my trailer. Like they'll all fit with tons of space. Like just they don't have any honey wagons. For those that don't know what that means, a honey wagon is a long row of rooms that people hang out in where they get dressed and eat and wait till they have to go to set. That's the normal place where stunt folks exist. Sometimes actors get really large trailers and that's nice, but you don't spend a lot of time in it. But yeah, so anyway, they wouldn't let me let them use it. And I don't know why, but they were like, they no, it's yours. And I was like, all right, whatever. But can you talk about that at all?
I mean, pretty much everything you've said logistically is correct. Within the union stuff, every principal performer and a stunt contract is the same pay level as a principal actor contract. They're the same. You are supposed to have a private place to change and do all that. I don't know why the production didn't take you up on that very polite offer. But that production was not fulfilling their side of the collective bargaining agreement.
That's true. For that specific day, that is true. So I think because they were on the way, they were on the way with the accommodation. But that's not ever nice when you're like, don't worry, it's coming. Can you just go into this porta potty and put on your stunt double costume? That would be great. Yeah. Oh, question. Are you a fan of Jackie Chan's work?
I mean, how could I not be? Like, he's just like total icon level.
I agree. He's total icon level. He's also done some of the most scary shit I've ever heard of.
Totally.
Because I guess the rules aren't the same over in China, but
Yeah, it's like Indonesian filmmaking, Chinese filmmaking, Bollywood filmmaking. Like, you'll see some like crazy, crazy, crazy stuff these performers do, and they're like, oh, yeah, it was $50. And you're like,
$50.
yeah. So, like, all of those international, like non-union films, or if they're international, they likely, just are non-union because they are.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Yeah.
the like I whine when like the G isn't right when I'm like signing out and they didn't give me all my overtime, or sometimes I'm like, oh, they could have given me a bigger stunt adjustment. And then you hear somebody fucking did something crazy for $50 and you're like, oh, I'm grateful, I'm good. I like living in America.
Well, yeah, because they like climb up like 100-foot bamboo poles and then fall through like 20 panes of glass and their like bodies explode and they're like, thanks for the lunch. I
Well,
guess
yeah,
that
at that point the glass is there to slow you down. Like,
yeah.
that's how some people think.
Yeah. Did you see The Fall Guy with
I did.
how is so because the director is a coordinator, I don't know if you've ever worked with him or if you've ever met him,
I have not worked with him or met him, but he's like kind of upper echelon LA. I've trained in one of his buildings before,
Oh, cool.
but like not a personal friend. I have no interior gossip.
No, I mean, but so how accurate is that? Is it very accurate, or is it some kind of like Hollywoodized for this film?
I've never been able to make out with Emily Blunt, so I think that was very unrealistic
Yeah,
to
same.
my
I'm not gonna be able to do
journey.
that either.
If they'd like to help correct that, for verisimilitude's sake, I do volunteer as tribute. honestly, it was so sweet, and like all of the stunts were executed super high level, drove the story. Like even just some of the stickers of the different stunt associations that they have on like vehicles in the movie, like are real places and real clubs where we have events and hang out.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was definitely something so authentic that it couldn't have been made without interior knowledge. And I do like I can legitimately say, one, they broke some records for stunts making that movie. Which is
Right,
great
because
because
the
it makes it a
role, right?
lot
They like broke the suicide role
roles.
record. Yeah.
And like breaking barriers like that, like one is incredible science, math, budget, all that stuff. It's also just a really good way to like get any naysayer to shut the fuck up, I've noticed. So like you kind of like And again, I'm always about reverse engineering other people's success. I see what he's done. I see this beautiful directing career and this incredible action he's able to do and this company he's built for himself as a producer and a director. And there's a piece of like, it's good, it's story driven. He gets the right stars, he gets, incredible action, but it's also like, fuck you, I broke a record. Like, you can't say I don't have a seat at this table. He's like very made himself before this movie, but I, even with how they rolled out like the marketing campaign and the way they did their red carpet, it was so intelligently done.
Yeah, it was really cool. That was really well done. Okay. So stunts have obviously played like a very huge part in your career, and they will moving forward. You say that you're an actor sometimes now.
Yes.
Is that a thing that you might be moving away from? Is it a thing that you'll never let go of, or that you'll always want to do? Because you've been in things and you're very, very talented. And you're also a pretty good fucking director too. So you're a true multi-hyphenate.
Thank you. Yeah, I think there's definitely something to like stunts has my attention because it's the shiniest, fastest, most dangerous thing. And I'm like, ooh, I want to do that. There's also just a complete reality of I'm a one of 10 people my height, my size, my weight in the country who do what I do at the level I do it. Whereas for any acting role, I'm one of 40, one of 60, conservatively going in to be seen.
Sure.
So some of it has just been game of averages. Some of it's been the stunt community has accepted me, and I've never really even felt like I found an acting community.
I see. Yeah.
So like some of it's picking what picks me back. Ultimately, like faraway lens, I identify as a storyteller. Usually it's a physical story. But I know I'll be working in film and TV. I'm sure it's gonna have a lot of different transformations. But I wanna
The future of this industry is looking really shaky and strange, and it's gonna turn into what it turns into. It's gonna phase and flux until it ultimately finds out what we're gonna do with all this AI bullshit. But yeah, I think this is where you belong, and I know that you do too. It's just,
I
yeah,
mean,
I
I
mean.
do, my joy is not like there are people I know who like love sitting down and like memorizing a script. And I'm like, can we ride horses?
Yeah, I saw
Can we
you're
play
like
with
you're super into
swords?
that too. How long have you been a horse girl? Horse girl.
Horse girl, yeah. I grew up moving around quite a bit, but for a period of time we lived in Kentucky. So I was like, we lived 30 minutes away from the Kentucky Horse Park. Like, I was riding off track thoroughbreds, doing hunter jumper, you know, like 20-year-old like horses who had like, you know, retired and, you know, were babied up. But I was just lucky that I got to ride at a really high level really young. And then ballet kind of took over, so that went away for a couple of years, and now as an adult, I've gotten back into it. And yeah, it's like they're just big puppies.
Yeah, that's really cool too.
It's
You
so
just doing
great.
cool shit all the time. Just always being cool, just being the coolest person ever. Like it's so awesome.
I am endeavoring to find some hobbies that aren't expensive.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's like the stunt person struggle. Like, all your hobbies are for work, so you want to invest in them, but it's also like, do you really need no another motorcycle? Well, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
I
How many do you have? Do you have more than one motorcycle right now?
have zero motorcycles right now.
Oh, okay.
I think like next year I'm gonna try to get like a conservative dirt bike. And
Is that
just
like a
have it to practice
California
on.
thing too? Like a bunch of my friends that moved there all have motorcycles or like some sort of motorized bike. Is it because of the traffic? Like, what is that about?
I think you have a longer riding season here. I think it is legitimately something you can do 10 and a half months out of the year easily here. So I'm sure that's an aspect. I think some of it is the gas prices. I think some of that is being able to split lanes in traffic. There's definitely more of like a wholesome riding community out here. And honestly, I'd say one of the biggest differences I've noticed between the East and the West Coast is people just don't drink as much on the West Coast because they have to drive an hour home.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, yeah, because here you just get in a train and then you're home and you don't give a shit. So it makes sense.
My first couple of months in LA, I was like, you guys don't get plastered until you can't walk. Like,
You guys don't fall
please.
down and go home falling down. Weird. You guys don't just
Nerds.
have like existential crises like constantly.
What's that like?
Crazy. What you in the sun a lot and you're happy all the time? Weird. Crazy.
Something in the tacos.
How so with things have changed a lot now that we're out of COVID, especially in the acting world, like just like how we do auditions and things of that nature, has that changed also for stunts? Like was it a thing where people got to know you in person before and then they hired you versus now maybe it's more through like a website? Like I know like there's like stunt listings, which is your like stunts website, right?
Not mine personally, but three New York guys ran that. And it's definitely stunt listing. If you're looking to get into stunts, it's the website to get on to be seen in North America. Stunts is like so, like you're brokering trust that, like, not only you're not going to get yourself killed, you're not going to ruin this stunt coordinator's career.
Sure.
So it is like it's a very tough community to get into. But once you find people who like you and vibe with you and communicate with you well, it kind of grows exponentially. Pre and post COVID, I would say not much has changed. in the middle of COVID. Like, you would find out about work like 2 weeks before because they would want you to be testing. Now it's kind of back to normal. You find out 3 to 4 days before, unless it's a travel job, when you'll find out a couple weeks before.
So it's really fast.
Oh yeah. And like best case scenario, like a stunt coordinator knows it's going to be a stunt because it's always planned to be a stunt. They've always planned to bring in a double. Sometimes halfway through a project, something will have gone wrong and now they hire a stunt coordinator and now a stunt coordinator is bringing in doubles. Sometimes one stunt coordinator starts a project and gets fired and everybody who is working for him no longer has a job. And a second stunt coordinator comes in and now he's bringing in his team. When you do have the job and you aren't coming in, there's a lot of like situational awareness that you don't know because you haven't been there yet, unless people are telling you or you're looped in with gossip or you've able to read between the lines. I'd say it's still hard and weird, but you find people who like really like you and really trust you and aren't going to be miserable stuck in, a shitty motel 2 hours away for the next 2 weeks. And now you have a stunt career. Don't be fucking miserable to be around. Every day is going to be a long, hard day. Have a smile.
Yeah. try not to hurt yourself. Be sure to get enough sleep. Blah, blah, blah. All that
stuff.
Don't
smell bad. Don't be fucking annoying. Like,
yeah, very basic tenet. I mean, that's kind of like everywhere, though. It's like, well, I mean, actually, it's very, very, very specific. That if you are an actor and you're like numbers 1 through 5 on the call sheet, you can smell as bad as you fucking want to. The stinkiest people I've ever met in my life are some of the most famous people I've ever met in my life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's like a defense mechanism because they're trying to keep people away? That's sure. Like the only thing I can think.
Some of them, most of them are like, I'm pretty artisty, right? I'm pretty frustrating. Like, I'm very annoying. Like, I take my craft very, very seriously, right? But there are people who are so annoying in that sense that, like, they can't eat, like, I can't even function. I can't do anything. I'm just working on my craft and I don't even time to eat or wash my feet or wipe my ass after I shit because I'm just so in it. And it's like, I get it and I can respect that to a point, but if you smell or you don't brush your teeth and like someone's gotta like hug you or kiss you or even be like in a 3-foot proximity of you, that's real, real shitty. Like there's certain things that can be forgiven, right? Like if you're on a superhero show and you're wearing like a fucking like spandex and like pleather and nightmare suit and you smell because you've been locked in like a sweat body odor prison for 5, 6, 8 hours in a row, you can smell all you want. You're being fucking tortured. But like if you're wearing like a t-shirt and jeans and you smell like the inside of a baby's diaper, go fuck yourself. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I also like, especially like if you have an acting job, you are going to be in a hair and makeup chair, so regardless of if all your scenes are alone, like there's at least 2 or 3 professionals who like have to be up in your grill.
Yeah.
Also like, oh, what
I missed
if
a bunch of questions.
What if like the deep method acting, like what if your character wiped their ass?
Like, then I guess you got to wipe your ass more.
Right? Like, yeah. Sometimes right. When you work with delusional people, you have to, like, talk to the delusion.
I know. You gotta get in there deep. I have 2 cool questions that I missed because we were talking. Have you done a lot of stunts with animals?
Huh. I've done like trainings with like the dogs like biting you.
Okay.
I've been around horses. I've never had a stunt where it's like because it's an animal.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm thinking on it. I don't think it's ever been like, you know, because sometimes you get jobs that like, you know, it's like no talent, but it's like they just trust you to have the nerves for it. Like one of my buddies had to like have a vulture on his chest, like pretending to eat. So they like had the front of his body padded and then like had meat on top of the pad. And he had
No.
like these like 3 foot, and like he didn't know what the job was. You know, he was just like, my buddy's hiring me, I'm gonna show up. And then he shows up and there's a wrangler and 3 fucking vultures. So no, I've never had that particular nightmare, but I would love
Holy
to work with
shit.
horses.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. I would not want to have a vulture sitting on my chest eating meat off of my body.
We would call your stunt double.
No, I know, but even if I was the stunt double, I wouldn't
Yeah.
want to have that happen to me. I understand. I would happily
Yeah.
pass it off to whoever. Next question is, do most A-list actors have people that they use all the time, or does it change from movie to movie?
So usually it changes movie to movie because even an A-list actor is in the power dynamic. So like I'd say where you see the most loyalty of a stunt coordinator continuing to work is because producers, there are definitely a couple people who keep their same double and carry them project to project. But that's like to be attached at the actor level is definitely like some actors aren't even going to negotiate for that because they don't want to have more things they're negotiating for.
I see.
And there are some stunt coordinators who will try not to use anybody who's coming in with an old guard because they want their people who they can trust. So,
Oh, okay.
depending on the dynamics of a show, like Warren Hull has a story. He's one of the guys who runs stunt listing and is also a stunt performer. But his actor came up to him and he was like, I'm so glad it's you. Can't it just be you every time? And Warren was like, I can't ask for that. You can ask for that. You every production you're on, you can ask for that. But I work for the stunt coordinator on this show.
Oh, I
And
see.
like it
Yeah.
is it happens. It's kind of one of those like fairy tale stories that you can have in stunts. But that's also like that only serves you if you are an incredibly versatile performer. Because if they fly you out to Timbuktu and you can do 4 out of 5 of the stunts that they need, but now they have to call in a, you know, another scuba dive double to do the fifth stunt. Why did they have to fly you out in the first place?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So like it's a good thing, but when you're in a position where people are that invested in you, you better be worth the money. You better perform when it, you know, there's you might be on a project for 3 months. There's 4 days that you better earn your keep.
Sure, yeah, that's true. I have a question, and it's very personal to me, so I'm gonna ask it because it's my show. So I've
You
been
get to do
told
that.
that the reason that people get excited that I can do a lot of my own violence is because I'm hard to find a stunt double for. And I don't know if that's true or if that is just them looking to not pay a stunt double.
I'd say a little bit of both. There are definitely people your size and stunts.
Of course,
If
yeah.
you go on Stunt Listing, which was the site I mentioned earlier, you can actually search by market, by region, by height, by weight. There are two guys off the top of my. How tall are you? You're 6 foot?
Six, I'm 6 foot 2 inches.
6 foot two. Okay. Yeah, there's two guys who I would think of off the top of my head to W height and weight, and one guy who I would think of to W just like on body shape if it were a driving scene or something like that. There's also like a lot of the people who are gunning as stunt performers are like, I do parkour, I'm a surfer, and a lot of the people who are a stab at being a stunt coordinator are more at the dad bod phase of their career. So I think like there are totally people out there who could and would double you. They're probably pre like more hustling stunt coordinating jobs than stunt performing jobs. But I know lots of people who would be willing to make $1,200 a day to be the back of your head.
And I would like them to, like I would like them to be hired and maybe not be used, but be paid anyway.
Totally. And honestly, your stunt doubles will love you forever if you just always get them in for one take, because you're guaranteed residuals if you're photographed. You are not guaranteed residuals if you are not photographed. So this is actually a huge way that anybody listening, if you're on a union project, you can show a little love to your stunt performer. Just let them get one take. Just get them in. You're putting them into the residual pool. You're gonna just that simple action is gonna make them, a grand or two down the line. And those little bits all add up.
You literally just changed my whole mindset for that because I didn't know that. I'm gonna make sure that that happens every single time.
Yeah, even if you just have them squaring up a shot, running down an alleyway, like usually if people are there, people are gonna want to use them because they paid for them, so why not? But sometimes it'll like I've had coordinators be like, okay, like just I'm gonna put you in for the rehearsal, go hard. I just want to be able to say that you got on camera. so that's kind of a behind the scenes way. Like it's not that we don't think the actor can do it. It's just that like the stunt coordinator is trying to get their people taken care of for the day.
That's like you could earn or not earn like health insurance because that day. So
To years from now.
yeah, it makes
Years
sense.
from now, because the residuals count towards your health insurance minimums. Yeah, it can like it can be a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been talking for over an hour. Can you believe it?
I mean the company is so good.
Oh, thank
I
you.
hardly noticed.
But I'm gonna wrap it up in a few minutes. This has been awesome, and there's actually so much more that we could have spoken about. There's tons, and you're so full of fun stuff to talk about. I'd love to bring you back again and to talk about other stuff or more stuff
Absolutely.
within the world of stunts. If anyone has any questions, last minute questions that they want to throw in here before I send the incredible Nancy Cantine away, I
While people
will.
are writing questions, I'm just going to shout out. I have a workshop coming up in January. It's going to be in Southern California. I'm going to be teaching people the art of how to perform fire stunts. It's going to be $2,200. You show up, we take care of you. We do not house you, but we do feed you and we do provide all your wardrobe and safety layers and all that good stuff. And you'll get beautiful edited reel footage at the end of it. If you want more information about that, check out my Instagram, iGnarly Entertainment.
That's great. I will link her this the Instagram and all the posts. That's that to me, that sounds like a great deal. That sounds like a great deal to learn how to be on fire. And also to get real footage is a huge deal too, because I know that just to have any kind of shit to like show that you can execute it is really important.
Yeah, and because of all of the legalities with fire stunts, it is hard to get good, safe legal training. And I know getting into it, you find people who set you on fire in their backyard, and it's just like a, secret little stunt community circle, and that's like really great. And you're like, oh, this is fucking amazing. I just did the biggest burn of my entire life. And then you're like, it's in your reel, and like you're so clearly running around some guy's backyard. So what I've tried to do with all my workshops is make sure people are getting really cinematic footage, and something that just like shows you as big and as badass and as beautiful as you are.
That's awesome. So we have a question. So how often do you typically work? I would imagine that you work more than an actor does, yeah?
I'd say like actors, 20 years into their career will typically have like maybe 20, 30 credits. Stunt performers 20 years into their careers will typically have like 1 to 2 to 250 credits. Some of that is the nature of the beast, where a lot of times day playing a day at a time just for the day of the fight or just the day of the fall. Jobs for a shorter run.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
Oh,
that
how
was.
often do I work?
Yeah.
Sometimes I go months without work. Sometimes I have 3 jobs in the same week. Sometimes I'm carried on a show for 2 weeks. So there it's like any kind of freelance position. Like right now I have 1 job coming up next week. And then I'm kind of assuming that's going to be my last job until the new year, because everything's going to kind of shut down between Thanksgiving and New Year's.
Yeah,
So
for the hiatus.
it's not a 9 to 5.
No, it's not a 9 to 5 industry, and I think that's the thing that people don't really understand, is that you're trying to put a bunch of jobs together throughout the year to make your total money for the year so that you can keep going and you can keep moving and just keep like it's not like we're in poverty, but it's like you're trying your ass off to put everything together so that you can have a nice life and also like do all this that you love. So it is really cool, but it can also be really hard and really mentally taxing, right? Like, you know.
It's, yeah, I getting to a place and building a life and building a financial safety net and having good financial practices and prioritizing which trainings I'm going to pay for and which stunt services are worth the investment and which one should I just pay for because the guy who runs it is a guy who runs a show.
Right.
There's like a, there's a real non-glamorous part of living your dream. And like there's this like I'm a stunt woman. I've been in number one movies. I've been, I've done things I never even imagined were possible. But then it's also like, am I gonna make my health insurance minimum for the
Right.
year? You can have these highs and reality can be blistering. And I think part of just staying in the industry is conditioning yourself for that and saving and investing.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. Well, cool. And Nancy, thank you so much for being here. Don't leave when you're not on the screen anymore. I
Okay.
wanna, yeah. And then thank you, and I will talk to you soon. Goodbye. All right, that was Nancy Cantine. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. She is just so awesome and super talented and a true multi-hyphenate. Thank you for watching and for being here and for asking all of your amazing questions. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you're watching on Facebook, I guess just keep being on Facebook. And if you're on Instagram, I do have a subscription where you can see behind the scenes things. I release TV shows and sketches and films and things of that nature. all for the price of one pumpkin spice latte a month. Until next week, this has been the live stream live. Thank you for watching, and I will talk to you soon. Goodbye.